Shabbos Perek Beis, Mishnah Hey, 2:5. Hamachabe es aner, if a person extinguishes a lamp, bepnei shehu misyara mepnei hagoyim, bepnei listim, mepnei ruach ra, v'mishvil achola sheyashan, if he did it because he's afraid of Gentiles who ultimately might kill him, or robbers who ultimately might find him and kill him, or ruach ra, that's some sort of mental illness, where if he doesn't get some darkness and peace and quiet and peace of mind, he could actually even die. And the chola, the sick person, that he could sleep, again, because we're understanding that without sleep, he's at risk of death. In all those cases, pater, one's, the literal meaning is he's exempt, meaning there's no carbon to be brought. Because in all these cases, one is actually permitted to do this. These, as the Bartender explains it, are cases of either pikuach nefesh or suffik pikuach nefesh. There's a potential risk to life, and in such case, one is allowed to do malacha, even malacha d'oraisa. Now, it's strange that the Mishnah used the word patur, which means exempt, because, as I've said before, in Hilchos Shabbos, patur usually means patur of al asur, that one is exempt from the consequences of breaking Shabbos, meaning no chatas, let's say. But still, he's violating Isra Durabanan. However, here, pater means pater in as much as it's actually mutter, permitted to do. And the reason why the Mishnah chose the word pater instead of mutter is to contrast it to the next part of the Mishnah where it talks about chayav. So the antonym, the opposite of chayav is pater. The antonym of mutar is asur, forbidden. So since the Mishnah is contrast in the first part to the second part, saying the second part is chayev, you'll be chayev for achatas. So the first part, it chooses the word pater, even though it means actually mutter. Now, just what are the cases here? Mitnei goyim, from the Gentiles, the concern is, for example, in the time of the Jews lived in Persia, so the Persians, they were Zoroastrians, and they had essentially, they worshipped sort of two gods, a god of light and god of darkness, and in certain holidays you were disallowed from having light anywhere other than in the temple, the temple of, you know, the idolatrous temple. And so if a Jew on a Friday night had a candle burning in his house, he was actually subject potentially even to be killed. And that's the case, for example, here. Listim, robbers coming to, you know, search and find you, and if they catch you, God forbid, therefore you'll extinguish it. Ruach Ra, I said, is some sort of mental illness, and again, risk of life. And the chola, the sick person here who needs sleep, this is again a person who the doctors advise that if he doesn't get proper sleep, then he's at risk to life, and that being the case, we can turn the lights off so he can sleep properly. Okay, next part of the Mishnah says, Kechas al aner, kechas al Hashem, and kechas al psila. If the reason why a person extinguished the flame is because chas means to have like pity or mercy. The point is he wants to save the ner. So for example, let's say, you know, if you have... We had the experience on Hanukkah, you set up the wicks and the wicks touch the glass receptacle in which the oil is, and they can actually make the glass shatter. So if, for example, you think that the lamp is going to break and you want to sort of spare the lamp so you can use it again, so you extinguish the flame to save your lamp so you can use it a second time. Kechas al shemen means that you want to save the oil for using later on, don't want to get all used up. Kechas al psila, saving the wick. Again, the idea here is that when the oil runs out, then the wick will run down and get burned. So if you put it out sooner, then the wick won't get burned. You can use it a second time. In all those cases, chayev, in those cases, you're liable, meaning you've done the malach of machabe, of extinguishing, and that's subject to the penalty if it's bemezid, then there's kares or skila, and if it's beshogeg, an accident, then again, you have to bring a chatas, a korban chatas. It's a little peculiar that the choice of words is kechas. The word chas means to have pity. Kechas means as if he's having pity, which is a little peculiar. There's a great thing said in the name of the Gra that it's kechas. It's only as if he is saving money, because since your expenses on Shabbos anyways come back to you, so you think you're saving money by extinguishing the flame and having the lamp or the oil or the wick to use another time. But the truth is, even if you would have let it burn the whole way through, as you're normally required to do, so then you get the money back anyway, so actually you've gained nothing, you've saved no money by extinguishing it. Therefore, it's not chas, but kechas, as if he was saving money. In any case, The Tanakam hold you're chayev for doing that because that's mechaba. But Rabbi Yosi poter bekulan. Rabbi Yosi says, no, you're not chayev, you're actually putter in all those cases. Chutz min a psila, with the exception of the extinguishing of the flame in order to save the wick. Mipnei shu osa pecham, because in that case, you've turned the wick into like charcoal, it'll burn better the next time. So what's going on over here? This brings us to an important discussion about melechas machsheves, which is a requirement. If you please listen to the introduction, if you have never listened to the introduction that I gave before, but melechas machsheves says that for a person to be liable for transgressing the Torah's prohibition of Shmir Shabbos, of violating the melechas, so he has to do that melacha in a normal, effective, permanent, calculated, intentional, purposeful way. And in the event that that's not the case, so then he doesn't meet all the criteria for melechas machsheves, calculated labor, calculated creative activity, and that being the case, he's actually not chayav, he's pater, he's exempt because he's missing a condition. So there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, the usual protagonists in that machlokas, whether a melacha she'eina tzricha lagufa fulfills the requirements of melechas machsheves. That phrase, melacha she'eina tzricha lagufa, means if you do a melacha, but you didn't do it for the melacha's sake. In other words, there's a purpose for the melacha, but you didn't do that purpose. So then the question is, since you're acting intentionally, but your intention is not to achieve what the melacha normally intends to achieve, are you indeed liable? So there are a few different takes in the Rishonim exactly what's going on over here. If it's about how it conformed to the way it was done in the Mikdash, Mishkan, etc. The simplest, I think the majority and the simplest example that is given is the case of if a person had a corpse in his home on Shabbos and outside the home was Rosh Hashanah. So the malacha that you would be potentially over transgressing by taking the corpse out of the home would be the malacha of Hotzah. You're transferring from A to B. A is Rosh Hashanah and B is Rosh Hashanah. When you transfer from A to B, you're liable for Hotzah, as we discussed before. The thing is, though, when you're moving the corpse from inside the house to out of the house, what's motivating you isn't that you want the corpse to be in B. It's currently in A, and you want it in B. You want to get the corpse into Shusha Rab. No, you have no interest in that. You don't care where the corpse ends up particularly. You just don't want it here in your home. So the point is that you're doing the malacha of Hotzah, but it's not Tzrich Laguf. It's not for the sake of transferring it to B per se at all. You don't care where it goes. You just don't want it here. That would be a malacha shen Tzrich Lagufa. Another example, different example. Let's say, for example, you need some sand for whatever reason. So you go into your backyard and you take some sand from the backyard. So digging a hole in the ground is also forbidden on Shabbos Midoraisa. If you're digging for agriculture and you're making the ground plantable, that would be the malach of chofer, of plowing, readying the ground to be planted with seeds. And if you were doing it for, like, say, storage, they used to store things underground in the backyard there, so then that would be a malach of bona, of construction. But either way, you're not interested in constructing anything or into repairing or preparing your backyard for anything. You just want sand. So by taking the sand, even though it's true you are digging, but the point by one normally digs is not applicable here. You just want sand. So you're doing a malacha, but it's enat shrich legufa for its own sake. And again, in both the cases I just gave you before, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, you did a malacha and you're liable, you're chayev. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, you're pater, you're exempt from a malacha shen shrich legufa. In our Mishnah here, the Tanakhama is going like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he's saying, since you're extinguishing the flame, for whatever reason, you're extinguishing the flame, and you want it extinguished, so it doesn't matter that your agenda is just to save the oil. The point is you're extinguishing willfully, purposely, to get it done, and that's how you do a malach of extinguishing, and that being the case, you're liable. Says Rabbi Shimon, and in this case our Mishnah, it's Rabbi Yosi, who goes like Rabbi Shimon, that's a malach ha-shernitzich lagufa. You don't care about the fire being out per se, you just want the oil not to get burned up. And that being the case, you're extinguishing, but not for the sake of the normal constructive use of extinguishing, and therefore you'll be exempt from the liability. You're only over an Isser Derabanan. The exception to that is the wick. The reason why is because the malacha of mechaba, of extinguishing, that was done in the Mishkan was the making of charcoals, of coals from wood into coal, so you can get a higher temperature when you have to, you know, smelt certain things, etc., and use, you know, like a furnace. So for melting the various, you know, the various metals, etc. So that extinguishing something that's burning, so you'll have like a coal, so it'll burn even hotter later on, is tzrich legufa. That's the normal way it's used. And therefore, if you're extinguishing your wick, says Rabbi Yossi, that you will be liable for, because like Rabbi Shimon would agree, that is tzrich legufa. You're doing it for the very purpose of having a better wick for next time. And that being the case, that's, I'll read the words again, Rabbi Yossi poter b'kula. Rabbi Yossi says, extinguishing the fire for saving the lamp or the oil, you're exempt. Chutz min pesila, but if you're extinguishing the wick which is burning, then you're liable. Mipnei shu osa pecham, then you're doing something constructive. Amalachat shetzrich legufa, you're making coal, a charcoal. The halacha is actually, whether you go like Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Yehuda, is actually not clear. It's a machlokas rishonim down to the Shulchan Aruch. However, the point's a little academic, because everybody agrees that a malacha shein tzrich legufa is asar midarabanan. And therefore, everyone will agree, you're not allowed to extinguish fire, even if you don't want it, you know, to save the oil. It's still asar midarabanan. The question just is, to machlokus, whether you're chayav to bring a chatas or not.